I'm delighted now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Linda Siegel. She is our legislative correspondent every year during the legislative session here in the state of New Mexico. And today is the day of our legislative preview. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Well, thank you, Mary Charlotte. I love being your legislative correspondent.
I love it, too. And our audience loves it because there are so many things happening in the New Mexico legislature. It's our government. We voted for it. And we need to know what they're doing.
Or, as an example in this last session, we didn't really vote for it because not very many of us turned out to vote. But those who did elect a different slate of people.
And I think this is also an opportunity to see what happens when you don't vote.
Yes. So change happens one way or the other.
Change happens. And we are all responsible for our government, strange as that may seem and unlikely as that may seem. We have now a new legislature. We've got a Senate and a House of Representatives in New Mexico, just as we do in the United States, in Washington. And what are we looking at now? We have a situation that we haven't had for, I think, decades, which is a Republican House and a Democratic Senate.
Yes, that's correct. We haven't had Republicans controlling the House since the year I was born, 1952. So it's...
Good heavens.
It's quite a change. And we're going to see what that means coming up soon.
So far, what are we seeing? Not to predict the future, but what kind of changes have we seen already? I mean, it's what, day two of the legislature right now?
Well, what happened, of course, is that the Republicans took control of the House. There are a number of swing districts, what we call swing districts. There are about 10 swing districts in the 70-member House. And those districts can go Democrat or Republican. The year before, they were Democrat, and this year, many of those seats went Republican. So now the Republicans have control of the House, 37 seats for R's and 33 seats for the D's. And so there are a lot of logistical changes. Even on the chamber floor, it means that all the Republican legislators, House members, moved over to the left side of the House chambers where the door to the lounge is, and all the Democrats had to move over to the right side where another door is, but it's not as convenient to the lounge. And it means that the Speaker, Representative Don Tripp from Socorro, is now the Speaker of the House. It means that all of the chairs and the vice chairs of the committees have changed. And it means even some of the committees, the names of the committees and the duties of the committees have changed. So it's dramatic. And all of the staff, or much of the staff that staffed all those committees, is gone and new people are in there. There's a new House Chief Clerk.
And those things, I mean, there is something that is very hard to see if you're not inside it, but the continuity of staff from year to year to year has a real purpose. And when that is disrupted, you run the risk of having people who just don't know how things are done.
Right. And we'll see how that goes. Now, to be fair, some of the staff in the Appropriations Committee in the House are still there, which is a good thing because House Bill 2, which, as your listeners all know, is the big total budget bill for the state, and it's very complicated. So it's good that some of the staff are staying over for that committee. And, you know, a committee here and there will be some existing staff. But mostly, you know, when a new person comes in, a new chair comes in, they want their people to be there.
Right. So the House of Representatives has changed a great deal in ways you just described. What about the Senate? The Senate is still Democratic.
The Senate is 25 Democrats, 17 Republicans. We did have a couple of changes in the Senate. Tim Keller ran for state auditor and won, and he had been a senator, and he was actually the majority whip in the Senate. And that's the second most powerful, the second most powerful person on the floor of the Senate. And so Tim Keller's seat became open, and Representative Mimi Stewart, who lived in his Senate district, got appointed by the Bernalillo County Commission to fill that seat. So she is no longer in the House, and she is now in the Senate. So those two changes. Michael Padilla, who's from the South Valley in Albuquerque, became the new majority whip. So those are minor changes, but every change impacts the dynamic of the chamber.
Now, this is the beginning of the legislative session. It's a 60-day session, which happens in the odd years,
number of years, yes.
And it's a 30-day session in the even years. What's the difference in the two?
Well, in the 30-day sessions, the only activity required to be done is to do the state budget. Oftentimes, governors will put other bills on the call, on the agenda for the session, and so other bills that aren't related to budget can be heard if the governor approves of them. But then in a 60-day session, anything goes. In fact, already we have 351 bills that have been pre-filed, introduced before the session even started.
Right. Now, what kind of shape are we in financially? I mean, you talk about budget and whatever all the other bills are that people get very excited about one way or the other. The bottom line is the bottom line, which is the budget. How are we doing?
Well, that's a very interesting question because we're not doing so well. Mm. In July of this year, when the Legislative Finance Committee and the Department of Finance Administration released their consensus figures about how much new money there would be for this legislative session for the next fiscal year, which begins July 1, it looked like we had $283 million. And then the price of oil, as everyone sees in the gas pump with where their gas price is going down, the price of oil just started plummeting. The budget figured in July had oil at $92 a barrel, which is where it's been riding for a couple of years or around that. And then in October, November, when they did the new consensus report, the price of oil had dropped about $30. And so we figured, okay, we have $141 million. But by December, the price of oil was well below $50. In fact, around $45. It keeps hovering around $45. Now, for every $1 change in a barrel of oil, the state of New Mexico loses or gains $7.5 million.
Oh, my goodness.
It is hugely significant. And in addition to that, we rely heavily on natural gas revenues. And it seems that natural gas has also been declining. And for every 10 cents up or down for whatever the measurement is for natural gas, we lose or gain $10 million.
Oh my goodness.
So when you put these two together with declining oil prices, declining natural gas prices, the state of New Mexico is in trouble with its budget because our overall budget gets about 20% from extractive minerals like gas and oil. So there was a meeting on Monday of the LFC, the Legislative Finance Committee, right before the session started on Tuesday. And they talked about how clearly we don't have $141 million, that it's down a lot, maybe as much as $100 million. Maybe, if we're lucky, we have $40 million, but it's all remains to be seen. And on February, the first week of February, they're going to be issuing the new consensus revenue. And that's going to tell us exactly how much money we can put into expanded programs, new programs. I'm pretty sure there will be no new programs coming out of this budget, but we need money for public schools, we need money for higher ed, we need money for Medicaid, and it's simply not going to be there.
You know, I remember 7-8 years ago when we had that thing which it was called the budget surplus.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like such a wonderful opportunity to put programs into place that were sorely needed, but then there's always pressure to just give it back in terms of taxes, just do tax cuts, which don't benefit the people who need the most. So whatever position we're in, it's still tough.
Oh, yeah. And we, you know, somebody asked me the other day, well, don't we save money for when it's when we might have something like just occurred? And the reality is we do. We have these huge permanent funds, which are well over $12 billion, the two of them, maybe even more than that. And they generate a lot of revenue that goes into the state budget. And we also put a lot in reserves. We've been putting about 10% of the total budget in reserves every year, just for partly for this kind of eventuality where suddenly we don't have money. But what's going to happen in this session is we're going to use some of those reserves, those 10% reserves, which are over $600 million. We're going to be using them to shore up this year's budget because since gas and oil has declined, we projected this year's budget to be much better than it is.
Now, how is the money that we have, those $12 billion, invested?
Well, we have investment councils, and it's in a whole array of different instruments.
So it's basically in stocks and bonds.
It's in
and
stocks
like,
and bonds, yeah. Yeah. And it's been doing quite well.
Well, that's good news.
Yes.
So you said that 351 bills have already been introduced. There's a lot of bills that are introduced every year. Some of them pass. What are the hot bills that people are talking about this session?
Well, we have all the hot-button controversial bills, which have been introduced for the last 4 years. The third-grade retention if a child can't read. That's been on the governor's agenda since the beginning. Repealing the immigrant driver's license. That's been on the agenda
since the beginning.
Yes, that will be introduced again. One to add to that, which is quite controversial as far as the Democrats are concerned, is the right to work legislation. And what that means is that if you are in a business that has a union or in a government department that has a union, right now, if there is the union, you have to pay a certain amount, even if you don't want to join the member, the union, you have to pay a certain amount of money every month to the union to represent you because they are your bargaining unit. And what Right to Work does is it says, okay, you don't want to join the union? You don't have to pay a dime. And then the bargaining unit is still representing you, but they're not getting money from you to represent you. And that is, it's been a strong, unions, of course, are strongly supported by the Democrats, and this is going to be a battle because they know that Right to Work will pass the House of Representatives, and the question is what will happen in the Senate.
It's interesting because the most coherent analysis of this anti-union movement that's all over the United States that I've heard is basically unions are basically the last institution, the last set of institutions that support the Democratic Party, whereas you've got the whole set of corporate institutions that are supporting the Republican Party. So when you're looking at it in terms of power politics, it's eliminating a huge financial support in an effort to destroy Democratic voting blocks.
That is probably true. Yes.
Which has nothing whatsoever to do with the right to work.
Right,
you look at what those words
mean.
Yeah,
well, of course, that's just the euphemism used, right to work. That everybody has the right to work now. I mean, they could go to work or not. So, but, you know, and then the Democrats have some issues that they're really pushing. The minimum wage, which they've been working on for several years.
What numbers are we talking about?
Well, there's a couple of bills already in, one for $10.10, I think, that Representative Lucky Varela from here is supporting. And then there's one from a senator that's $8 and something. So there's going to be, they'll be all over the map with the different bills.
Interesting.
I also noticed that there are quite a few bills trying to put caps on payday loans, which is another agenda item that the Democrats have been introducing for several years now.
Does that have bipartisan support?
It depends. Generally, not, because the caps that the Democrats want to put on are much less than what corporations obviously want, particularly those loan corporations.
So, minimum wage, payday loans. What about water?
You know, there haven't been any water bills yet. I know there will be some capital outlay funds going for water. So we'll be watching those for you because I know your listeners are interested in that. But it is only the first week, so
right.
We'll see what's happening. But, you know, many of the bills, the large majority of the bills, are totally nonpartisan. They're not Democratic bills, Republican bills. They're sort of general things that...
Like what?
Well, like some of the bills that I'm working on, they're health care bills. They're like updating the Social Work Practice Act, the Licensing Act for Social Workers, updating the Occupational Therapist Act, general health care bills. There'll be a lot of those. Now, some of those might be more partisan than others, but... crime bills. There's a lot of crime bills that aren't necessarily one party or the other. So there's plenty of those hot button ones, and they get all the coverage. But there are hundreds of bills that have nothing to do with one party or the other,
and get very little coverage.
Right.
But really do affect people's lives.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Now you, Linda Siegel, are not only our legislative correspondent, but you are a lobbyist working in the legislature every year. So
yep.
In the interest of full disclosure, what are you working on?
Well, I represent early childhood providers, private child care providers, nonprofit providers. I represent Santa Fe Public Schools. I represent nurses, many different kinds of nurses, nurse practitioners, school nurses, nurse midwives, occupational therapists, chiropractors, the Domestic Violence Coalition. So I have a good array of clients that have lots of different issues. A lot of them are money issues, where we're trying to expand their appropriation, although probably not this year. But domestic violence programs always are unfortunately growing. Their need is growing, and the funds aren't necessarily growing. So there are lots of, again, those kinds of nonpartisan issues.
Very interesting. We're talking to Linda Siegel. Now, when we think about crime bills, we think about civilians committing crime, but in the last year, there's been so much of what looks to many citizens like the police committing crimes.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any legislation? Are people talking about ways to address that, better training for the police, things like that?
Well, I did notice there's one piece of legislation that would require stronger civilian review panels for incidents that happen with police officers. So I think that's going to come up more this session because we have had such issues with police shootings. One of the things that was worked on during the interim committees, we talk about those sometimes, because once the session ends, the legislators still keep working. They start meeting from June through December that year in different interim committees that are topical. And there was a criminal reform committee that met all of last year and will continue meeting this next year, looking at how do we have too many crime bills? Do we have too many penalties? Do we have too many people in prisons? What can we do to lower the costs that we're spending on corrections and put more people in probation or put more people in halfway houses. So they have a few bills that are coming out of that committee, which are very nonpartisan, because this has actually come from the Pew Charitable Trusts, who have been working with other states on how to address the fact that the United States of America has more people in prison per capita than any place in the world. And should we really be doing that? Is that really helping us as a society? And so Right. We're going to see some of those nonpartisan bills come up.
There are a lot of terms that get thrown around during the legislature, and every year we try to explain what they mean, because if you're listening to a newscast or reading the paper and somebody says the word drop, they dropped a bill. The first 10 years that I heard that, I thought like they had it in their hand and it fell on the floor. What does it mean?
That means they introduced a bill into one or both chambers and it gets assigned a number, and we say dropped. I was doing a presentation to early childhood providers yesterday, and I was talking about carrying a bill, and people said, well, what exactly does carrying a bill mean? Does it mean you move it from place to place?
Like a baby?
Yeah. And so I explained that that means that legislator is responsible for that bill. They decided to introduce it, and now they're making it go through the session.
So that's one term. What does it mean to table a bill?
Now, tabling bills is a technique used in committees, and it can also be used in the whole Senate or the whole House. And it's used primarily to, instead of doing a do not pass to a bill, committees will just simply say, okay, move to table, a majority votes, and then that bill dies, just sitting there in that committee. Now, a tabled bill can be brought back up if someone who voted to table it wants to bring it back up and there's enough votes to bring it out, to bring it up, then it can come back. But tables are usually just to kill a bill so that you don't have to say, we're not going to pass it.
And basically, a huge number of bills are in fact tabled because you get thousands of bills introduced, and in order to even make it to a vote, they have to go through two or three committees
right.
each.
Yes.
And the idea that every bill would make it to a vote is, that's not what happens.
Right, right. I don't know that a huge number of bills get tabled, but certainly a lot of bills get tabled. And since every single bill, in order to get on the governor's desk, has to pass through, as you said, two or three committees in both chambers,
right.
simply you run out of time.
Right.
So many bills never, they might pass one chamber and then they get in a committee in the other chamber and they just never get heard.
So it actually, I mean, to get a bill passed is no joke. First it has to be written. Who writes them?
The Legislative Counsel Service. And those are year-round staffers who work on the fourth floor of the Capitol, and many of them are attorneys. They're the bill drafters. When a legislator has an idea for a bill, they will go to one of the legislative staffers, one of the bill drafters, and then that drafter will write the bill, and then the legislator will make sure it's what they wanted, and then they will drop it in to their chamber.
Now, we hear about bills getting written by special interests. How does that work?
Well, a lot of us lobbyists do write bills. We go to a legislator and we say, we really need to upgrade the Social Work Practice Act. So, like what happened with the social workers is we spent the last year going around talking to social workers saying, well, how do you want to update your practice act? Because it hasn't been updated in 25 years. And so we got everybody's ideas, and then we talked to a couple sponsors, and we wrote the bill, and then we gave it to the sponsor and the drafter, and then it was all worked out and been introduced.
So it might be you working on a social work bill, it might be an energy company working on
absolutely
an oil and gas
sure.
bill.
Sure.
And so then it gets written by this committee up on the fourth floor, then it gets introduced, then it goes through three committees.
Two or three committees.
Then it gets voted on. If it gets through all of that, and then the same thing happens in the other house, bills get introduced in the House and in the Senate, and then they have to go over to the other one, then they go to the governor.
Right.
And then she may or may not sign it.
Right, right. So a lot of bills, if a bill goes to the governor before the last 3 days of the session, she's only going to have 3 days to sign or veto it. If the bill goes to her in the last 3 days, then she will have 20 days from the day the session ends to sign or veto the bill. And the reality is that the vast majority of bills get to the governor in the last 3 days.
Right.
Because there's this big rush at the end of the session that we've talked about before to pass all the bills at the end.
And if she doesn't sign it, then that is a de facto veto called a pocket veto.
Yes. Good, Mary Charlotte, you are.
Yeah, after 11 years on the job, we're beginning to learn these words. Then there's another word, which I also took me forever to learn what this meant, which was the word memorial.
Ah, memorial. Yes, a lot of people think memorials are like someone died and then the legislature passes a memorial to say
they were
a great person, yes. And that does happen, but mostly memorials are pieces of legislation that we put together to study something. If we want to, like I'm doing one for the school nurses this year, to study the issue of how to get safe school nurse staffing in every school in New Mexico. And we will say all these people have to be on the task force, the Department of Health and the Public Education Department have to run the memorial, run the task force, and then report the results of that task force back to one of those interim committees, like the Health and Human Services Interim Committee. And a memorial can either be a House memorial or a Senate memorial, or it can be a joint memorial. And if it's a joint memorial, it has to go through both of the chambers, but doesn't need to be signed by the governor, just provides the legislative direction to a department head to do something.
And in many cases, those are kind of like proto-bills. Like, they study something, and then a year or two or three later, legislation gets introduced that has a financial impact and has a legislative impact.
Absolutely.
What else? Oh, well, let's talk about my favorite meat, pork.
Well, I don't really know yet. I don't think we know yet how much pork we're going to have. And pork is the capital outlay money that every legislator gets a little piece of it. That's been the how it's always been done, that the governor gets a third, the House gets a third, and the Senate gets a third, and then the House and the Senate, they give a certain amount to each of their members. And that gets spent on local capital outlay needs. So we have a great delegation here in Santa Fe, and they usually give money to the public schools, to the community college, to the city, to the county, for whatever those entities have said they need in the capital outlay arena. I think in, like, the community college, we're asking for some money to expand this greenhouse that we have where we're doing all this experimental stuff, and the public schools are asking for some roof repairs and security cameras, and the city will have whatever they're asking for in the county too. So pork is very important because it really helps communities upgrade facilities and get what they need.
Linda Siegel is with us every Friday, starting this Friday from 8 till 8:30. It's called the Legislative Update, and you will be here live for the next 2 months.
Yes, I can hardly wait.
Well, we look forward to it, and we look forward to being updated on all these issues as they arise. And if anybody has any questions and would like to participate in this conversation, please write to me at radiocafe@ksfr.org. It's always really good to hear from listeners about what concerns them about the legislature. This is a democracy, we hope. We try to maintain it as a democracy of one kind or another. And citizen participation is the only thing that makes it work. Linda Siegel, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.